2010, I started thinking about multiplying ministry. I'm an assistant minister in a local church, and I was just trying to think, how do I multiply what gets done? I'm so limited, and there's so many people who could be doing things. How do I help multiply and maximize the ministry that we're doing? And I stumbled upon a book called The Leadership Pipeline by a guy called Ram Charan and Stephen Drodder and something something Noel, forget his name. And it's a great book, but like all leadership books, it's so boring. Like all leadership books. Like it was so boring, and it's written about kind of international corporation conglomerates and how they should structure things, and so it was very hard to translate it into church world, local church world. But I was like, the basic principles in this book were so helpful. I was like, I'm gonna figure out how this works in our world. And so in 2010 was draft one, and then in 2013 there was another draft, and then 2015 another one, and 2017 this is the fourth kind of iteration of this and how it works. So I tell you this just so that this is applied and thought about and road tested in a local church, and it's been tweaked, etc., etc. So this is the end of 7 years of implementing, is where what I want to share with you this morning, the Savo. And this is the book, Leadership Pipeline. This is the book that I wanted to write in 2013, but realized that if we didn't do wisdom in leadership first, that none of this leadership pipeline thing would work, because it is relatively fragile in the sense that if we're not doing basic leadership right or well, then leadership pipeline is a structure that's just not going to work in our churches. It really relies upon good leadership for it to work. And I'll show you how and why that is. So if you think of wisdom in leadership as sort of the introductory foundational level leadership, leadership pipeline is kind of next level leadership. So I don't want to take too much time preamble. I want to do the actual thing. Here's where I think we agree. The job of the minister, the pastor, the gospel worker, isn't just primarily to help people or counsel people or hold people's hands or any of that. Not that that's wrong. That's just not the main thing that we're supposed to be doing. And it's not even simply that it's our job to teach the scriptures as though the objective is that our churches would be smarter. I think we all agree that the job, what we're trying to do, is raise up ministry workers in the people in our church who treasure Jesus above everything else and live their lives in service to him. I take it that we all probably agree in the ballpark on that. The goal is Ephesians chapter 4. Right, to equip the saints for works of ministry. I'm not going to unpack all of this. This isn't a Bible talk. But this is what we're on about. This is what we're doing. And the job of the minister is to equip saints for the work of the ministry. This is what we're supposed to be doing. But I think we would all agree this is very hard. And it's not easy. And it's not even that obvious as to how we should do it or what exactly we should be doing. And if we're probably honest with ourselves, we don't spend as much time doing this kind of thing as maybe we should. And here's what I want to do, briefly unpack this blind spot that I don't think is really a blind spot. I mean, if it's a blind spot that you're very aware of, is it really a blind spot? That's a great kind of philosophical question we'll think about later. But I want to unpack this, what this blind spot is, how it works, explain the pipeline and how that works, and then try and leave a fair chunk of time just for us to ask questions and interact and think and process. So, what is this blind spot? I want to outline the challenge and the blind spot quickly and briefly, and I'm aware that this is risky, because if you don't agree that this is a blind spot, then everything else that I say is irrelevant. So I'm going to take that risk, and I'm going to just kind of briefly unpack it, because I've been in enough talks where the guy speaking spends so long describing the problem that then we don't spend much time on the next thing. So I don't want to be that guy. So here's the challenge I think we face. And by we, I mean everyone. The senior minister, the assistant minister, the pastoral minister, the ministry pastors, the pastoral care workers, the worker pastoral carers, the care pastoral workers. Here's the blind spot. We struggle to equip the saints for the work of ministry to a high degree. I suspect if your church is like my church, we're pretty good at equipping the saints for low-level ministry. And we're okay at sending one or two, perhaps, to further full-time theological education to become the minister. But then we struggle to train the saints for the work of ministry at a high level that's above low, and that's not sending them to a theological institution. And I think there are three interlocking, self-feeding realities that create that blind spot. Number one is that everything tends towards complexity, right? The job keeps getting harder. That's number one. Number two, there's always more to do. And the more there is to do, the more there is to do. And the more that there is harder to do than it used to be. Right, that's the first two, kind of feeding in to each other. And then the third facet, we know our job is to train God's people for works of service, but it seems hard and it takes a long time, and we're not always very clear about exactly what we should be doing or exactly what we should be training them in, and exactly how to go about it. So it's kind of confusing and complex. And so when you have these three interlocking, self-feeding realities, it creates this blind spot. There's more to do, it's complicated, and we're not quite sure how to do it. And so you get this blind spot. Now, I think there are two basic ways that we have historically gone about solving this problem. Number one, we just try to keep up ourselves doing more and more and more things, working longer and longer hours. I call this burning leaders, which is what I guess Valerie talked about yesterday. There's more and more to do. It's harder and harder to do it, so I will work longer and longer. Or my people, I'll push them to work longer and longer. And so we burn leaders. That's solution number one. Solution number two is we hire someone, an assistant minister, a youth minister, a kids minister, whoever. We hire someone to share the load. I call this strategy buying leaders. All right, so we try and buy someone to do some of the work. The problem with these two options is that there's only so much you can do, right? There's only so much steam you've got until you burn. Well, there's only so much money you have until you can't afford to buy any more leaders. So what I'm saying is that we know we want to multiply people, train people, but it's really hard, it takes a long time, we're not sure how to do it. There's always more and more to do, and it's complicated and increasingly so. So I want to offer another option, that is that we build leaders. Now, I know that's what you already thought we should do. I'm not suggesting that's like an amazing thought. The solution is building them. But what I want to put forward is a particular framework and philosophy for building them, which is called the leadership pipeline. And this will work in any size church, small, big, monstrous, whatever. The obvious question is, what is a leadership pipeline? When people first hear of a leadership pipeline, they think of something like this. Some pathway, progression from non-Christian to new Christian to mature Christian to a ministry leader. This is not a leadership pipeline. You might call this a discipleship pipeline or a discipleship pathway, but it's not leadership pipeline. The problem with this kind of discipleship pathway is it's not really how life works. It's not really how discipleship works either. But it is how a pathway works. So that's something. But this is not a leadership pipeline. People often think, all right, okay, so then he must mean something like this. Next slide, which is also a pathway. It's a pathway from not serving to a new volunteer to a team leader to a leader of teams of teams. This is closer. We're getting closer. But this isn't a leadership pipeline either. This is more like a leadership progression. Right, this isn't a leadership pipeline, it's a leadership pipe dream. The leadership pipeline is not just leadership progression, and it's not just role definition, and it's not just leader development. The pipeline is where all three of those overlap, and it's that bit in the middle. Leadership progression, role definition, leader development. It's the bit in the middle. That's where leadership pipeline exists. What we usually see in most churches is a team of leaders being led by a team leader. You kind of your classic org chart, you know, team led by a team leader. And you get an org chart kind of like this one on the screen. Leadership pipeline is the secret ingredient that's often missing in this kind of setup. We all would have this, whether you draw it or not. This is how every team works. But the secret to making this work is leadership pipeline. Leadership pipeline is you have these different layers of leadership, but when you enter a new layer of leadership, it's a completely new and different role that requires a whole new mindset. A switch needs to be flipped when you go from one layer to the next. And if that switch isn't flipped, then the whole thing doesn't work. This is why leadership pipeline isn't just a straight line. This is why it's like this, with sharp turns at every layer, because it's something fundamentally new that is happening at every level. This is probably what it would look like in the majority of churches. Some churches may have one or two more layers, but no more than that. So at the bottom, you've got team member. And for most of us, this is the person who is on a roster. You know, a Bible reader, a prayer, the sound person. They are doing their job as best they can. That's a team member. And then you've got a leader. And a leader is someone who like leads the kids in the kids ministry, leads the high schoolers in the high school ministry, leads the small group. They are on the front line leading the people who need to be led. You know what I mean? Like they're the ones leading the kids. Not the team leader who leads the leaders. This is the leader who leads the kids or the youth or the small group or whoever. And then you've got someone overseeing them, maybe like a youth minister or a kids minister or someone like that. And then there's the senior leader, senior pastor, senior minister. And that's the pipeline. Some churches that are larger might have some more. So we'll put it up on the screen. On the right, if you're kind of a larger church, you might have another layer. So what we've got there is above the leader, you've got a team leader before you have the ministry area leader. And this kind of structure would work for, you know, up to 1 to 500 person church. Larger than that, you probably get one more layer above the team leader, between the team leader and the ministry area. But then really you don't need any more layers than that to 10,000, 20,000 people. You don't need any more. So, here's the overview of what's happening here. Every layer has a collection of skills, a way that time needs to be allocated, and a change in focus and how the leader feels about the things that they're doing. And then every time you change layers, all three of these areas will undergo change as well. The skills that you need, the way you use your time, and how you feel and what you focus on. And let's break them down and unpack them. Let's take a look at the frontline leader, like that leader person. What does it look like for them? And then we'll see what's meant to happen as they move into a team leader arena. So, moving from a leader to a team leader, this transition, look at that, it's moving. There's two things. I just wanted you to see that. I don't use PowerPoint slides, like, ever. And so this is next level for me. All right, so there's two things that we need to know about this transition from the get-go. Number one, the transition from leader to team leader is the most common transition in our churches, and it's the hardest transition of all of them. You know the whole pipeline. The leader to team leader transition is the most difficult transition. And unfortunately, it's also the most common transition, which is why we do it so badly. Because we do it all the time, and it's really hard. So, if we kind of double-click on the skills of the leader, what does the leader need to learn? In the skills, we break them down into three categories. We'll go to the next slide, I think. This is how they break apart. Maybe even the next one. Right. So we've kind of double-clicked on skills. The skills break down into three smaller categories. You've got the core skills. These are the skills that will continue to develop as you go up the pipeline, as you go up each layer. The same skill will change and evolve. That's a core skill. And then you have layer-specific skills. And these are the skills that you need to do the work of that layer. So the leader has different skills that they need, so the team leader, etc. And then you have, lastly, role-specific or ministry-specific skills. These are like the things that the youth leaders need to do to be youth leaders. They need to know how to run an activity or whatever. You know, kids leaders have to do craft. These are like the role-specific skills. The video editor needs to know how to edit videos. Role-specific skills. So let's take a youth ministry leadership position, because hopefully we're all vaguely aware of what this might look like. That might be a gross assumption, but I'm going with it. Here's a youth leader, and thinking through this from what they do. These people directly lead the high schoolers. So the frontline leader is an individual contributor. They run the activities, they run the small groups. Their job is to do their things. So they have skills that they need to learn. So they need to run some specific youth ministry skills, like run an activity, right? Specific youth skill. But then they also need to learn some basic skills of just being in a team with other leaders. They need to learn to do things like arrive on time and be reliable and aim for quality and be an encourager and be flexible and things like that. These are layer-specific skills. Anyone on any team needs to learn those kind of things, right? Be on time. Be flexible. That's layer-specific. But they're not youth ministry things. Then you've got some core skills. as well. So we'll drill into the core skills. A core skill is something like vision, strategy. This is a type of skill that's going to evolve and transform at every layer. So what, for example, does vision look like for the frontline leader? Well, they need to be aware of the vision and support it. That's what they need to do with vision. They just need to know it exists and be on board. Vision. What does strategy look like for a frontline leader? They need to know the strategy and serve effectively in their role. That's what they need to do in the strategy. They're not going to create it, talk about it much. They just need to know it and be effective in their bit. Okay, so let's zoom back out again. Youth leader, what about their time? How do they use and allocate their time? Well, they're thinking short term, mainly week by week. What's happening this week? What am I doing this week? What's on for me this week? They're thinking about arriving on time. They're thinking about organizing their stuff for this week. That's their time horizon. Okay, let's go back out again. We've looked at skills, we've looked at time. What about their focus and their feelings? Well, the frontline leader, they need to want to do a good job. They need to focus on getting results through their things, you know, running a good game, leading a small group well. They're thinking their individual contribution. That's what they're focusing on. That's what makes them feel like they've achieved something. They did a good job. So the summary of the frontline leader is, I succeed when I succeed. That's the frontline leader job. That's the leader thing. I succeed when I succeed. I did a good job. I ran the activity well. Great job. Now, all of this, what we've said so far, should be reasonably familiar. Maybe not as, like, broken up, but familiar. But let's say there's a person on the team who's very good at all their skills. They do a good job. They're punctual. They're reliable. They're faithful. We think they could be a team leader. Let's ask them. They say yes. They become a team leader who now leads a team of leaders. If we're switched on, we realize that now there's a whole new menagerie of skills that they need to learn now as a team leader. That's different to them being a frontline leader. They need to learn, for example, their layer skills will now change. They are now doing things like delegation, what I would call ministry distribution. I think that's better than delegation. We're distributing ministry. Right? They need to learn that. They need to learn like what performance monitoring looks like. They need to, are there people doing a good job, coaching, feedback, communication, inspiring their team, setting the emotional climate, all of these kind of things, what team leaders do. There's some layer-specific skills that they now need to learn. If we're really switched on, we'll notice that the core skills evolve as well. So for a leader, vision meant they were aware of it and they supported it. But for a team leader, vision now means not just that they're aware of it, but they're able to clearly articulate it and they can implement it. It's not just that they're aware of it now, they're a team leader. They need to be able to articulate it and implement it. But we're still talking vision. Or strategy. Strategy now means not just knowing it and playing my part, but strategy now means leading my team to unite around the strategy and then enable each part to play their part. And so the strategy skill has now evolved now that they're in the team leader layer. So you see how the team leader isn't just a bigger, more organized frontline. leader. They are now doing a fundamentally different job than what the frontline leader did. And this is just us talking about skills, right? We haven't talked about time and their feelings yet. But we will. We'll talk about that soon. But what happens if you've had this happen to you, right? You have a team where the people on that team, over time, take less and less responsibility, they show less and less initiative, where no matter what you do, the team just kind of starts to go backwards. And why does this happen? You have a team where the team leader, you've installed them, they're growing in their skills, they're getting better, they're implementing vision, and they can articulate it, and they're doing some coaching and feedback. They're doing the skills, but the team's going backwards. It's not really working. The people in the team are getting worse, not better. And you kind of think, what is happening? You can't work out what's going wrong. This is the thing that happened in my teams in 2010 when I was first trying to work these things out. What was going on in my teams that the team leaders were learning the right skills, but the teams were going backwards? So 2010, 2011, there was a team in our youth ministry, had a new team leader, and he was gifted in running activities and small groups. He was switched on. He was growing in all of his skills, as in his team leader skills. He was running meetings really well and rostering people and distributing ministry and responsibility. But the team was going backwards, and I couldn't work out what was going on. The rest of the team had significantly slowed in their development. They had noticeably plateaued in their ability to run activities, run small groups, talk with high schoolers, etc. In terms of like behavior management, you know, discipline in the room, the rooms were falling apart. It was turning into chaos in these rooms. The team leader was doing a good job. So why was this happening? If you've ever had this kind of thing happen in your teams, right, it's a mystery. What's going on? And then it dawned on me that the skills area had been slowly changing. He'd been improving, learning how to be a team leader, because there was kind of vaguely obvious that something needed to change in the skills area. But nothing had changed in the time allocation box, and nothing had changed in the focus and feelings box. And it was the lack of change in those two areas that was killing the team. So let me show you what should have happened and then why it made the impact that it did. Being a team leader isn't just about learning new skills. One of the things that we often miss is the time considerations have to change as well. So because for a team leader, they're not just thinking week by week. They need to start thinking termly. This is a longer range of thinking. But even more than that, more importantly, they need to start making time for the people in their team, to be available for the people in their team, so that when their team asked them questions or needed help, it wasn't an interruption. It wasn't that the team member was stopping me from doing my job, my work. Like, the interruption is the job. The interruption is the work that the team leader is supposed to be doing. And this shift in mindset of how they allocate time hadn't and wasn't happening. But here's the biggest thing, right? This is the secret ingredient. This is the 11 herbs and spices of how this works. The focus and the feelings also need to change. And this is the hardest part. This is the most overlooked part. We might sometimes be aware that there's new skills and that there's new time allocations that need to happen. But the change in focus and feelings, I think, is the secret blind spot. At the frontline level, success looks like doing a good job of my tasks. Because I'm an individual contributor. I do my things. In the team, obviously, but I'm doing tasks, my tasks. But for the team leader, this transforms. Now, success is about getting success through others, which is massively different. Right now, their success is my success. Now the team's success is my personal success. I feel like I succeeded when we succeeded, when they succeeded. And this shift is seismic. There is a revolution that needs to take place in the mind of the leader that is so personally hard and often so painful that they don't do it. And so they remain an individual contributor. When I'm a leader, I'm an individual contributor. The summary is, I succeed when I succeed. When I'm a team leader, now the revolution has to take place. I succeed when you succeed. The revolution is, I'm now no longer primarily doing the ministry. Now I'm getting ministry done through people. And when this doesn't happen, when this mental switch doesn't get flicked, it collapses the team and it clogs the pipeline. Here's why. Firstly, if the team leader sees the questions and the concerns of their team as interruptions and as a distraction, then it means that they're not really valuing the people in their team and what's going on for them and the ministry that the team member is doing. Because you're a distraction to me. You're an interruption to me, to the things that I'm doing. Right? That the team leader doesn't see the leader's work as part of their own work. And so if I think helping you is a distraction and an interruption from my work, then I won't be helping you, developing you to do the work that you're supposed to be doing. That's the work I'm supposed to be doing. I'm supposed to be developing you. But developing my team, that's exactly my job as a team leader. But if you're an interruption, that means I haven't quite understood what my job is. If I think my job isn't to help you, then what am I doing as a team leader? Well, what I'll be doing is I'll be focusing on being an individual contributor. And if I'm an individual contributor as the team leader, then I'm doing the same thing that you're doing. But they made me a team leader because I'm better at it than you. That's why I'm where I am. I'm doing those things better than you do them. Which means now I'm competing with you, my team, and I will beat you. Because I'm better at those things than you are. And so if you lose often enough, then you'll just stop doing them. Because I do them, and I do them better than you. And so now I've competed with you, and I've disempowered you, and now I then take over your job, and now I start to burn out, right? Because I'm doing not just my job, I'm now doing all of your jobs, my team. Because I've competed with you, and crushed you. And if I have come down the pipeline as a team leader, if I've come down to do the leader job and competed with you and beat you, then I will push you down from being leader to being recipient of ministry. And so you'll just, in my youth ministry team, you'll just start acting like big high schoolers. and discipline won't be working, behaviour management won't be working, and it'll be me leading the whole thing with the high schoolers and then the leaders who are behaving like high schoolers. And it's my fault. It's not that the leaders are being bad leaders, it's that I have led them as a team leader so poorly that I have pushed them out of leadership back into studenthood, but they still get to keep the title leader. That's my fault. I did that. And so what happens is, like, does this scenario sound familiar to anyone? This is what happens when a team leader doesn't understand their role and then pushes their people back down the pipeline. Right? Your church has a leadership pipeline already, whether you realize it or not. You already have one. It's just like, is it good? And are you using it properly? See, this can also happen when I know I'm the team leader. I know all the changes I'm supposed to make. I know all the skills I'm supposed to learn. I know the time things I'm meant to change. I know the focus and feelings I'm meant to change. But I also know I'm not really doing a very good job of any of them, right? Because they're new. This is normal, right? When you learn anything new, you suck at it to begin with. This is totally normal. But I suck at it, and I don't like feeling like I don't know what I'm doing. And what I do know how to do is all of the frontline leader stuff. And so because I want to feel like I'm doing a good job, and because I want to feel like I'm competent, and I know I can't do my things, I'll just start going back to doing your things. Because I know I'm good at them, and maybe people will then tell me, great job, that was really good. You did a really good thing. You're really good. Because when I do my team leader things, I'm not doing a good job of them. And so no one's telling me I'm doing a good job. And so, all things being equal, I'm more comfortable doing the leader things, and so I'll just do that. It's easier. I'm good at it. I'll just do it. And then what happens is, same thing. I push my leaders back down the pipeline, collapse the whole thing and clog it. So again, the secret ingredient, like the 11 herbs and spices of leadership pipeline, is the focus and feelings shift that needs to happen. When success is felt as no longer I succeed when I succeed, but it's now I succeed when you succeed. And I get that same feeling of like, that was I just did a great thing when you do the great thing. And I have the same feeling as if it was me who did the great thing. That's the shift that has to happen in the heart that is often so difficult and so painful. So the shift between the front line and the team leader is a shift in prioritization. You prioritize time differently and you prioritize the feeling of success differently. That's the shift that happens. When it comes to personal discipleship, this is the distinction I think that we're making here that we struggle with. When it comes to personal discipleship and character, my fruit grows on my tree. But when it comes to leadership, the higher in leadership, the more of a team leader you are, my fruit grows on your tree. And that shift is so painful because now my tree doesn't look very good anymore. Because there's no fruit, it's all on your tree. That's my fruit. But it's on your tree, and am I okay with that? And often we're not. I need some fruit on my tree. And so this is the struggle. This is why it's so hard to pull this off properly, because it requires all the things that we talked about in wisdom. It requires humility and servanthood and all of those things. Which is why we, the Christian churches, should be way better at leadership pipeline than the secular corporate organizations. Because they try and do servant leadership. They like practice it, but they don't. They can't do it. They don't know how to do it. They can't do humility, not really. Because they can't. They don't have the God who is the King, who is the humble, suffering servant. They don't have that. And so they can't do servant leadership. They pretend and practice and think they're doing a great job of it, but they're not. But we can do it, which means that leadership pipeline for us should be heaps easier. Because we've got servanthood and humility as a value in a way that they never will. So this is why the leadership pipeline has all these sharp turns in it. That's why it juts back and forth. Because at every layer, these revolutions need to happen. And they happen at everyone. They don't just happen between leader and team leader. They happen all the way up the pipeline. The skills change, the time allocations change, the focus and feelings change, and it's painful every time. This is the monumental change that has to happen. Every other transition is in some ways the same, just a variation on a theme. But the first time where it goes from leader to team leader is the most traumatic. And so it's the most difficult, and it's also the most common transition that we have to make. And when we screw it up in this first turn from leader to team leader, if we screw it up there, then we seriously hinder any development that then happens up the pipeline, and we keep people low in the pipeline. So, real quick, and then we'll do questions for the rest of the time. Like, I'm very aware that this is so much content, and there's lots happening here, and there's lots to process and think about and just kind of let it sit and percolate. But how does this multiply ministry? I'm saying that when it comes to thinking leadership development, we need to move away from a discipleship pipeline or pathway. Not in terms of we should move away from that. That's good. But discipleship is different to leadership. They kind of overlap, but they're not the same. So we need to move away, as we think leadership development, from a discipleship pathway. And we have to move away from a leadership progression and think more leadership pipeline. This is what I'm saying. Leadership pipeline is a philosophy and a framework for intentionally developing people in leadership so that we multiply people and multiply the ministry that can get done. Let's tease out briefly, real quick, why this leadership pipeline framework is a good thing. Firstly, you're building leaders rather than burning them or buying them. Second, in this framework, lay leaders can lead high and significant leadership positions easier than when we don't think like this. Thirdly, it genuinely multiplies ministry as people are developed and given the space to really lead rather than have the team leader or the minister or whoever compete with them and then beat them and disempower them. And all of that often happens unintentionally. Fourth, you get sharing and efficiency. When your whole church is set up like this with pipelines, then it means that you can share team leaders across church life. A team leader from kids ministry can move into a team leader in youth ministry because they know the same skills. They just need to refine some of their role-specific skills. But the same core and the same layer-specific skills they've got. And so you have this sharing and efficiency of leadership where people can move across ministries and enter a new one at the level they left the last one and make an impact straight away. Fifth, just like every disciple is a disciple maker, so every leader should be a leader maker. And in the pipeline, every leader is a recruiter and is developing people at their level and below. Recruiting is a challenge for us, no matter the size of our church and how many people we have. Recruiting is really hard. But the leadership pipeline enables you to multiply the recruiters. And so recruitment happens at all levels of the pipeline, every layer. See, my team leaders are training people in their teams to do the team leader job. So I'm training team leaders, and those team leaders are training their people to be team leaders. Which leads us to six, succession planning. When the pipeline is working well, when anyone steps out of the pipeline, they quit the ministry or they transfer to a different one, you can have someone else move up into their spot quickly and easily because they've been training them to succeed them. Earlier this term, one of my Connect Group team leaders, like my small group team leaders, had to push pause because he was joining another kind of our more social justice thing. And so he was just kind of like moving out. And so he moved out from being one of my small group team leaders. And by the end of that same day, I had someone in his spot replacing him as the team leader of the small groups. By the end of the same day. Because the pipeline was working, he had been training the people underneath him, and so within 6 hours, his role had been filled and we were still rolling. It was like nothing happened. This is kind of the power of the pipeline. When it's working well, you can do succession planning quick and smooth. What the pipeline helps you to do is love people better, you'll have less burnout, you'll buy less leaders, it'll be cheaper, you'll get more done, you'll leverage more of the genius that already exists in your people, and you'll do Ephesians 4 better, maybe easier. You'll equip the saints for works of ministry, which is the job. So, summary, and this I probably should have said this at the beginning. Leadership pipeline doesn't grow the church. It's not the Holy Spirit. Leadership pipeline facilitates growth. It creates space so you don't hinder growth accidentally. And it creates space so that you don't frustrate growth accidentally. But it doesn't create growth. It's a structure and a system and a way of thinking. It's a philosophy that helps you to do it easier, better, quicker, without getting in your own way. But it doesn't grow anything. All right, that's enough. We can do... What are we doing?
What we might do is, like yesterday, Adrian's going to be on that side, I'll be on this side. Stick your hand up, straight up, and he'll give you a microphone. And let's let the prettiest lady start. Renee.
Is this... Thanks. Ideally, I assume, you would want a different person in each of those levels, those roles.
Yep.
Sorry. In some places, we found you might have to have one person double up on perhaps a leader and a team leader role.
Yeah.
That's not ideal.
Yep.
But are there some roles that you really shouldn't have doubled up, and where is it okay that perhaps you can double up?
Yeah, that's nice. I think you can do it on anyone. But yeah, it is a challenge. It's a struggle. So again, in my world, all of our youth ministry team leaders are player coaches, shall we say. Like, they still do lots of frontline leading, but they are also the team leader. And so it just requires even more clarity to be clear that they need to be doing those team leader things, like, as well as their frontline things. Like, my role at church is a mess. I'm in almost all of those layers in different ministries across the place, and so it's quite complex to know when I'm doing what. And so I often tell the people in my teams what I'm functioning as at that exact moment. I'm like, all right, so I'm here as like the unit leader, which is the one between team and ministry area. I'm here, this is me as this, but not me as over here in a different role, you know what I mean? So it's just complicated, and it just requires clarity. But anyone can be playing multiple roles, or you can collapse some of those, you know, concertina it down a bit and combine some of those roles. Yeah, totally. Mix and match.
I'll go.
You go.
Thanks, man. Can you comment a bit about, I think really helpful you were talking about that paradigm shift and the pain that it is to let go of your own fruit and right. feeling that cost. How important is that corporately, though, as a whole community to be willing to do that? So in practice, I'm thinking in magnification and music stuff. Often people are appointed into leadership because they've got a lot of role-specific strengths.
Yeah.
For them to lead in this way, it potentially means rising up people who don't have a strong role specific, and while that's a pain for them, it's something that we also need to all corporately own. And so can you comment a little bit about that and how to nurture that culture?
Do you mean...
Does that kind of make sense?
I'm not sure.
I'm on the fly here.
I'll say it back to you and then you can tell me if I got it. Are you asking, so when we move up the layers or whatever, yep. and we need to give up that desire to I succeed when
yes.
I succeed.
Yep.
The rest of the church also needs to be aware of this, because as I move up and I'm training people below me, they're not as good as me, and we as a church just need to be aware for this to work, it's not going to be as good for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think I nailed it. Yeah, that's a great question. I don't really know, but it's critically important, right? Otherwise, you just have the geniuses with 1,000 helpers, and then when the genius leaves, you're sunk. So, I don't quite know, but I agree with you. That's what has to happen. And that we have to be okay with things not being as good. There is this like tension, right, where you need to protect the platform, but at the same time develop people, how else do you raise up people unless we admit they're not going to be good and they will get better? So I don't know, but yes, we have to, as church, agree that if we're going to be committed to raising up leaders, we're going to have a dip in quality. Yeah, but I don't know. But I'm with you.
Hey.
Hey.
Let's say that you build a pipeline, but it's a shonky pipeline.
Yeah.
Which never happens.
No.
But
hypothetically
speaking. And part of the shonkiness is that you have done a poor job of helping a leader become a team leader.
Yeah.
So that team leader is still acting like a leader and you can't figure out what's wrong.
Yeah.
Is it possible to dismantle the pipeline and try and get that person back to being a leader and still keep the system intact? Or do you have to just... How do you, if you get that person and you realise they're the wrong person to be a team leader,
yeah,
how do you dismantle things without the whole thing?
Yeah, that's a great
apart?
Question. Yeah, because like some, there are some people who maybe they can't, or maybe they just don't want to, you know, make that value shift. But that's always the reason, right? It's always whenever a team leader fails, it's not because they didn't learn the skills. The skills are relatively easy to learn. What's really hard is the heart. Right? That's always why a team leader fails. You know, fails. Yeah, I mean, I think it's the... You have spent time with them. You're walking closely with them. You're talking about this kind of thing. They're aware of the shift that needs to happen. And maybe over the course of a year or so, as you meet and talk and one-on-ones and you're doing your kind of coaching and feedback and stuff, it becomes clear to everyone that they don't want to make that value shift, which is totally fine, right? That's not like they're a bad person. It's just they prefer to just do the things. Like, I'd prefer just to make the videos, you know? I don't want to lead a team. I love making videos, that's what I want to do. This is like in my world, there's a video guy and that's what he is, wants to make videos. Don't give him a team of people, that's not fair to them. So it's just you're having this conversation, feedback, and then this person can go back down the pipeline to a leader. And you raise up someone else to be the team leader, that's totally fine. And happens, at least in my world, all the time. Because I think I'm good at being able to tell whether a person could do it, but I'm not. You kind of just have a bit of a crack at it and see what happens. Like in my world, I'm just lurching from one crisis to the next. So that would be my answer. Yeah, you can do it. You're not going to dismantle the pipeline. You're going to have a conversation, coaching and feedback, and come to a common mind. It's not really working. What do you think of pausing? What you have to do is make sure that going down and up the pipeline is not a status thing. Like, you're not better if you're a ministry area leader. There's no status involved. That's why, like, I'm really conscious of not calling them levels, because like levels feels like you need to level up, and if you level up you're stronger and better and you can carry more coins and stuff. If you're with me. So you know, like, I don't want to call them levels, because that kind of gives it that sense of the higher you go the better. That's not how it works. It's just you're doing different roles. So you have to work really hard to keep the eliteness and the status out of it. And if you can get that, then moving up and down just becomes like, you know, chocolate and strawberry. Like, it's just like, yeah, you're up, I'm here, and we're just doing different things. When it becomes like a status thing, it becomes really hard to, you know, ask a person to go back down. I don't know, there's some things.
Yeah, thanks, Craig. This very helpful. On that, I wonder, just a side issue, some of the situational leadership stuff, for those of us who have learnt that, might help on that topic you were just talking about. My question, as you've rolled out your leadership pipeline,
yeah,
how have you kept the distinction between the leadership pipeline and the discipleship pathway and maintaining the integrity of both?
Yeah, that's good. That's a good question. Like, in one sense, they're two separate things. So your discipleship pathway, like in our church, we don't have a pathway. We have a collection of catalysts. That's a different conversation. But discipleship is critical, though, right, for leadership. There's a certain bar, an entry bar, that needs to be met for Christian leadership, mostly to do with character. And so these two systems overlap each other and interlock in the sense that the people in the teams, if people are moving up this pipe, if they're in this pipeline and they're not growing as a disciple, then you've got a problem. That's going to blow up in their own life, but also for the ministry as well. It'll explode at some point. So there's that close walking of discipleship just in Christian life that needs to go along with this at every layer. It's not as though you could be a very strong, faithful disciple, more holy than I, and be a team member. Right, there's no necessary discipleship advancement that happens up the pipeline. You want your strong disciples all in it, full of it. So does that answer your question? Is that what you're asking? I know you have no microphone, so... Ah, I see. We don't really talk about this from the front. So people wouldn't necessarily see this. We'll talk about our discipleship vital signs. We'll talk about our growth catalysts. But we don't really talk about leadership pipeline. But when you're a leader, then we'll start talking about it. And it becomes a thing. But from the front, like in church world, we don't really have two things. We just kind of have the discipleship vital signs. And this is, we just don't talk about it.
Hey, I'm just following on from Jordan's question. You know how the way we might have normally done it would be, in any team, you kind of pick the person who's the best at their role and takes the most responsibility,
mm-hmm,
make them the leader.
Mm.
And then you're talking about another fundamental shift,
yeah,
to the next level.
Yeah.
Is there a way we can avoid making the mistake that Jordan was talking about of promoting them? I know that's probably not the best word, but pushing them along,
yeah,
before we actually make that mistake. What kind of things, other than your gut feel, what are there... things that you notice in people that say, yeah, I reckon they could actually make that fundamental shift in skills and, yep, feels and, yep, all that?
Yeah. Yes. So you want to break apart the thing where we promote the person who's the best at the role. Because what the pipeline tells us is being good at one level tells you nothing about whether you'll be good at the next layer or not. Like, it's got nothing to do with it, almost. You know what I mean? Like, but what we would historically do, perhaps, is just whoever's the best leader, we'd ask them to be a team leader. That would be kind of, that's how I used to do it. Seemed like a good idea. It's a terrible idea. Don't do it. Because all you do is set them up to compete, right? And do all the things that we talked about. So the first thought is to just break apart that instinct to promote the one who does that layer the best. That's not the criteria. The criteria is things like, will they take on more responsibility? Obviously character, right? Like, are they reliable? Are they faithful? Are they, you know, nice? But are they willing to take on more responsibility? Do they have an interest in doing some of that higher layer work? Some of the things that I'll do is I create little task forces to solve problems that a task force is not required to solve. But I'll just create a little task force that will exist for, like, we'll meet three times to solve this problem that could have been solved just by me or by someone. But I'm going to create a little task force and suss out the people, how they contribute, what they think, whether they turn up. Just suss them out to see whether they could start thinking of issues at that next kind of layer of conceptual thinking. So I create little micro teams to test out people just to see how they go. And then that gives you a good look, right? Because then the person who thinks really carefully and has good suggestions, interacts really well, turns up, you're like, maybe that person. And then the one who just, like, doesn't even turn up, oh, I forgot. You're like, yeah, maybe not that person. So they're my two thoughts.
This is good. You should write a book. One of the things you're talking about is the team leader mentality of I succeed when you succeed, and that shift there that needs to happen. Any thoughts on how do you share the wins of a team with the team leader? Like, they need to know if they're doing a good job or not, and that depends on how their team is going. How do you share those wins of the team with the team leader, particularly if they're not there? Like, the youth group leader is going to be there at youth group, but if they're not necessarily, how do you do that? How do you help them feel like they're winning when their team is winning?
Like, really, you don't. It's really up to them. Like, in my role, we did this thing, like, in our staff where someone on the team didn't really know what everyone did. And so he was like, can we just write out what we all do? So he, like, created this little thing and we sent it out. Was like, what are you responsible for and what do you do? You had to, like, type in. So I wrote in the things I'm responsible for: kids, youth, young adults, small groups, leadership, development, strategy. What do you do? I was like, meet with people and then preach, and that was it. I don't do anything.
You should write a book.
Like, all I do, like, I meet with the kids minister, and then I meet with the youth minister, and then I meet with the young adults minister, and then I meet with the Sundays minister. I just meet with people. We talk. We problem solve. We just do stuff. But then they go do all the things and get all the praise, and everyone's like, great job, kids guy. That was a brilliant idea. And I'm like, but I don't tell anybody. Because I don't care if you think it's my idea or not. So it's not really, you can't. It's up to the leader themselves to be okay. You know, that we meet, and then, like, in my world, Trav goes and does this amazing thing that I'm not at and I don't see, but he reports back, went swimmingly. And I need to be like, great job, team. And it's on me. Just one more quick thought as, like, Dan walks up to try and wrap me up. Like, one of the things, there's this, like, shadow feeling that ministers have that looks very similar to doing a good job, but it's actually not. And that is, I'm passionate about people being helped and coming to know Jesus and growing as a follower of him. That's the good one. The shadow one is I'm passionate about people growing, becoming Christians, having great, you know, pastoral conversations, like, with me. And they look the same. I'm passionate about the gospel, passionate about conversions, passionate about people growing, but I'm passionate about them growing through my conversations. That's a shadow drive that just is destructive for ministry and particularly for multiplying things. So if that kind of like shadow drive is in the leader, then you as a great team member, you can't do anything, because that's my issue, that's my heart issue, where things need to happen, growth needs to come, disciples need to be made because of my conversations. Then you can never help me. That's my issue. The end.
Craig, thank you so much for being with us. Let's thank him.